value of money. What now remains to be seen is whether oil prices will increase in the near future, and if so, what lies ahead for the Saudi regime, with outgoing President Trump causing Riyadh to lose yet another ally, and hence the possible reason why it is now extending the hand of friendship to Tel Aviv, something that many will no doubt condemn as an act of treason. That's just about all the time we have for this episode. I'd like to thank both Professor Hossein Askari and Professor Collins Nithman for being on the show. And on behalf of myself, Atifa, and the whole team here on Economic Divide, stay safe.
In the limelight. Thanks to new research by an international team of astronomers, the oldest and most distant galaxy observed in our universe to date, known as GNZ-11, has been identified. We're prepared for you an article written by staff of Science Alert website. The piece is titled, Astronomers Find Oldest, Most Distant Galaxy to Date. Please stay with us for more. Since time immemorial, philosophers and scholars have contemplated the beginning of time and even tried to determine when all things began. It's only been in the age of modern astronomy that we've come close to answering that question with a fair degree of certainty. According to the most widely accepted cosmological models, the universe began with the Big Bang roughly 13.8 billion years ago. Even so, astronomers are still uncertain about what the early universe looked like since this period coincided with the cosmic dark ages. Therefore, astronomers keep pushing the limits of their instruments to see when the earliest galaxies formed. Thanks to new research by an international team of astronomers, the oldest and most distant galaxy observed in our universe to date, known as GNZ-11, has been identified. The team, whose research was recently published in the journal Nature Astronomy, was led by Linhua Jiang of the Kavli Institute for Astronomy and Astrophysics and Professor Nobunari Kashikawa of the University of Tokyo in Japan. They were joined by researchers from the observatories of the Carnegie Institution for Science, the Stewart Observatory, and the Geneva Observatory, Peking University in China, and the University of Tokyo in Japan. Simply put, the cosmic dark ages began about 370,000 years after the Big Bang and continued for another 1 billion years. At this time, the only light sources were either the photons released before, which is still detectable today as the cosmic microwave background radiation, and those released by neutral hydrogen atoms. The light of these photons is so shifted due to the expansion of the universe that they are invisible to us today. This effect is known as red shift, where the wavelength of light is elongated or shifted towards the red end of the spectrum as it passes through the ever-expanding cosmos on its way to reach us. For objects moving closer to our galaxy, the effect is reversed, with the wavelength shortening and shifting towards the blue end of the spectrum. For nearly a century, astronomers have used these effects to determine the distance of galaxies and the rate at which the universe is expanding. In this case, the research team used the Keck 1 telescope at Mauna Kea in Hawaii to measure the redshift of GNZ11 to determine its distance. The results they obtained indicated that it is the furthest and oldest galaxy ever observed. As Kashikawa explained in a University of Tokyo press release, from previous studies, the galaxy GNZ11 seems to be the furthest detectable galaxy from us, at 13.4 billion light-years away, or 134 nonillion kilometers. That's 134 followed by 30 zeros. But measuring and verifying such a distance is not an easy task. Specifically, the team examined the carbon emission lines coming from GNZ11, which were in the ultraviolet range when they left the galaxy and were shifted by a factor of 10 to the infrared 0.2 micrometers by the time it reached Earth. This level of redshift indicates that this galaxy existed as observed roughly 13.4 billion years ago, also known as just 400 million years after the Big Bang. At this distance, GNZ11 is so far that it defines the very boundary of the observable universe itself. Whilst this galaxy has been observed in the past by Hubble, it took the resolving power and spectroscopic capabilities of the Keck Observatory to make accurate measurements of its distance. This was performed as part of the Multi-Object Spectrograph for Infrared Exploration, or MOSFIRE survey, which captured the emission lines from GNZ11 in detail. This allowed the team of scientists to produce distance estimates for this galaxy that were improved by a factor of 100 over any measurements that were previously made. Professor Kashikawa said, "The Hubble Space Telescope detected the signature multiple times in the spectrum of GNZ11. However, even the Hubble cannot resolve ultraviolet emission lines to the degree we needed, so we turned to a more up-to-date ground-based spectrograph, an instrument to measure emission lines called MOSFIRE, which is mounted to the Keck 1 telescope in Mauna Kea in Hawaii." If subsequent observations can confirm the result of this latest study, then the astronomers can say with certainty that GNZ11 is the furthest galaxy ever observed. Through the study of objects like this one, astronomers hope to be able to shed light on a period of cosmic history when the universe was just a few hundred millions of years old. This period coincides with the universe was beginning to emerge from the Dark Ages, when the first stars and galaxies formed and filled the early universe with visible light. By studying these, astronomers hope to learn more about how the large-scale structures of the universe subsequently evolved. This will be assisted by next-generation telescopes like the James Webb Space Telescope, scheduled to launch on 31st of October 2021. These instruments will even allow astronomers to be able to study the Dark Ages itself, a time when the only non-CMB light was the spin line of neutral hydrogen in the far microwave wavelength of 21 centimeters. To be able to probe the very beginnings of the universe itself and watch as the first stars and galaxies form, what an exciting time that will be! The observations that made this research possible were conducted under a time exchange program between the Keck Observatory and the Subaru Telescope on Mount Mauna Kea in Hawaii.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Questions and answers in Islamic upbringing.
I have a son. He's really in fond of football, and he's so weak in his lesson courses. I really don't know what should I do.
Could you tell me when we have to start upbringing our kids, that is, from the very beginning of the birth?
I have a little son, and he's so disrespectful. I want to know how to treat him according to the teachings of the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them.
Answering parents' questions in upbringing their children in an Islamic way.
Do you know what Islam is? It's a way of life for all. It is taught in the Quran for big and small. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. In the name of God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, you are listening to the program Islamic Upbringing. In this program, we are going to look at some principles of upbringing children so that the audience gets a detailed description of the matter concerning how to raise their children Islamically. The main source is the book Children in the Quran and Sunnah, compiled by Ayatollah Ray Shahri. And today we have in our studio guest speaker Sister Salma Khalfan, who is an Islamic researcher in the Hawza Ilmiya of Qum. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program, Sister Salma.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you so much. It's an honor to be here as well.
Thank you for being here. So inshallah, we're going to continue talking about how to deal with inferiority complex, which was the topic of our previous program. And you generally told us what inferiority complex is, and now you are going to continue telling us some of the symptoms. One of those which you mentioned was about how a child will seem very cowardly, timid, extra shy, hates meeting children of his age.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. He sometimes also tries to act over smart because he wants to get that outside attention to fill in the gap of this inferiority complex. So he might ruin it because that's not the way to act normally, right?
Yeah.
Over smart, overconfident. It spoils things for himself as well. And then he might also stammer while talking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes he's scared and he wants his way, but he's wanting to get heard, so he might stammer. Sometimes it's a normal disorder, of course, so that has nothing to do with inferiority complex, but sometimes he might stammer due to this getting his way, like for example, especially near a teacher.
Yeah,
when he's really nagged at or shown negative behavior and always criticized and all these kind of things, so he might stammer while talking, getting his he might not be confident enough to stand up and answer also for himself or defend himself. And he frequently gets irritated. Such a person frequently gets irritated and he seeks the attention. So, when he doesn't get the proper psychological happiness at home, the emotional connection with his parents, because we're always nagging him, so he'll look at it elsewhere.
So he'll look for attention outside.
Yeah, and that's very bad, because as he grows up, you know, children get deviated.
Yeah.
They're on the right path. They think that at least my friends are giving me that satisfaction, psychological satisfaction, emotional satisfaction. They might fall in the wrong path also.
So do you think that this inferiority complex in reality is present even in a small content in everybody?
Definitely. Okay. Because parents sometimes keep a behavior that they don't want to forego that behavior.
Yeah.
Like if they start comparing a child, they'll always compare. Even taking examples, they should be very careful, you know. Some parents say, we take examples.
Yeah.
That's not like example as in somebody you see always. You can take other examples of maybe long time ago people or some people that the child doesn't know of. You know, so that the child can feel that he's not part of my life. But when he's part and parcel of the child's life, he feels he's being compared to.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so all these kind of things creep a kind of an inferiority complex to a certain level, even at a small level. But we can, inshallah, get rid of that. Parents
inshallah.
Are smart enough, if they're real perfectionists,
yeah.
they can get rid of that instead of, you know, just keeping on with these kind of attitudes. Now, well, let's go to the steps to prevent this inferiority complex.
Okay.
So that's when the role of the parents, especially the mother, comes. Mind you, when I say mother, I don't mean the father is excluded. The father is part and parcel of the family, and his relationship with the children counts as much as the mother's relationship towards the child. And these two build a strong foundation for the child to carry on.
Definitely.
You know, without this complex. Because sometimes I've heard of a child, an innocent girl who's now grown up, but her father was always telling her things, you know, that why do you look in the mirror? For example, a child, a girl, when she's growing up, she likes looking in the mirror. You think you can be like that actress whom you're watching on TV? And she used to feel very bad about it.
Yeah.
So this also makes the complex of the child be built, that she feels that she's not pretty enough, you know, she's ugly or something like that, which is not a good feeling at all.
That's so unfortunate. All right, we're just going to take a short break and we will be back for more on this, inshallah.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear audience, to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. And the show is Islamic Upbringing with our sister, Sister Salma Khalfan. We have been talking about how to get rid of this inferiority complex. And you are telling us on ways to prevent this inferiority complex.
So first of all, the parent can make the child know of his or her unique gift that Allah has given them.
Yeah.
Okay. However, maybe the child is not very clever or very creative, or some things missing in the child that the parents would like that, you know, that trait to be there in the child. But the parents always look for that and they compare and they spoil the image,
you know,
of their own image as well as the child's inner, you know, state. They spoil it in the long run. That's why inferiority complex creeps in.
Hence why they feel they're not good enough.
Yeah. So the child should be made aware of his unique qualities.
Okay.
So the parents can talk to them, for example, that if they have, and Allah gives everyone a unique quality. And even if the people who are really like, you know, handicapped or they can't perform enough like normal people, they even have a unique, you know, gift Allah has bestowed.
Definitely.
Upon everyone. That's Allah's doing. Of course, he's gifted everyone with a certain quality, and that's the parents' work to find out. And parents are smart enough to find out that my child has this and this.
Has this strength.
Yeah, exactly. So always to instill that you remember you can give your share in the world with this quality, and always remind them, and always, you know, like focus on that to be more and more, you know, stronger in that the child. Like, for example, if he knows how to build blocks well, so, you know, you have to praise that and say that one day you will, inshallah, be a builder.
Hmm.
You know, you'll build good buildings or something like that. Or if he's good in writing, that one day you'll write, you know, a book.
Yeah, I think this kind of inspirations, especially given by parents, is very important, because in the end, the child is looking up at the parents, and if they show them that they are able to do something, then they will definitely try.
Yeah, they will definitely try. Yeah. If they show the, you know, that appreciation to the child will feel that, yes, I have something to look forward to. Yeah.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, all some children may have so many capabilities, but they're not very good in social interaction. So the child, the mother keeps on, or the father keeps on saying, you didn't behave nicely with these people. Yeah. You are good for nothing. You know, you always make us feel ashamed. So the child will have so many abilities, but because of that, he'll always feel secluded, and he'll feel that inferiority complex.
Yeah.
And all those signs will come in him, you know.
And also this fact about, you know, not having some gifts, like some traits and some positives. For example, even if I'm good at something, I'm not good at something else, Allah wants us to build on that thing that we are not good in.
That's
so
right.
Generally, as parents, they should focus on their good qualities, those which are, you know, eminent.
Yeah.
And then these other qualities, they should slowly help them gently.
Exactly.
So that later on when they grow up, the child knows that, okay, now for those things that I'm not able to do,
yeah,
I'm supposed
balance
to try
it, yeah,
and, you know, exactly, and try and reach that. I can even reach the same level.
That's right.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I like that too much, what you said. And inculcate that to the child, that it's not the end of the world.
Exactly.
You can still practice these kind of qualities to come in you, you know, and encourage the child so the child cannot feel neglected.
Exactly. Thank you very much. So we're just going to take a short break, and after the break, we're going to continue this discussion. Inshallah, stay tuned.
Ya muqiyal khayrat, ya muqiyal khayrat.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, excessive blame causes the fire of obstinacy to flame.
Okay, so you're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran, and this is Islamic Upbringing. So we have been talking about the steps to prevent this inferiority complex that is formed in a child, and one of the very important things that I feel you mentioned was making them feel that they are unique and outlining their strengths.
Yeah, that's right. Now, another point to deal with this inferiority complex when it's come specially, or you just don't want it to even enter in the first place, always show these kind of characters. Always keep this attitude with your child. You know, all these things are very positive with the child. So whether the inferiority complex be there or not, but of course, with being there, these really specially help this kind of attitude towards the child. So another one is acceptance.
Okay.
You have to accept your child as the child is. For example, if the child is just not performing well in school, you can't force it. Maybe his IQ is low,
yeah,
but it doesn't mean that, you know, now things are static. You can't, nothing can be done with about it. You have to accept the fact that this child is a bit slow, right? So try to be enthusiastic about it with him.
Exactly.
Don't make him feel disappointed. Try to tell him the main thing is struggling, you know. Allah rewards for struggling. People reward for the marks maybe in the school, but Allah rewards for your struggle. How? And I am the one who is happy with you. And if Allah is happy with you, what more could you want? Slowly, slowly building that positive feeling in a child would really take him, you know, a great deal forward, I guess. So accepting the child and not having high expectations, which is one of the major causes of inferiority complex in the child. You know, everyone wants the child to be like a superstar.
Yeah.
But
they want them to excel in every field.
Exactly,
everything.
Every field. So parents should realize this and accept the child as they are, instead of pushing them to acquire external traits. Parents should help the kids now discover the intrinsic qualities.
Mm.
You know, the qualities that matter, the virtues that matter. Like, there's so many things that will be accorded for in the hereafter. And in dunya also they play a great deal, like good akhlaq, you know, behaving good with the people, politeness, doing good to people, having a charitable hand. All these things are the main values that take you forward. Having a degree and good marks is not something that paves the way to success.
Yeah.
Success in both worlds are what Islam tells us
as
these kind of values. So intrinsic qualities should be laid emphasis on.
Definitely.
High expectations and unnecessary burden to excel in everything can make a child afraid of failures, you know, which could eventually lead to a feeling of being inferior. So, you know, when you have high expectations towards a child, then the child will always fear of doing, badly, being a failure. Even in games, they say that when we are playing with children, we should keep a neutral attitude when they win or lose. So that do not make them feel that they've done a bad thing. Don't make them feel a sore loser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let him take it graciously. It's just a game.
Exactly.
And after all, life is just a game.
And I guess also if the parents themselves, when they lose in something and then they overreact, you know, the child is seeing. So
yeah.
I guess even the way the parents, or
indirectly,
not even the parents,
yeah.
just even the siblings or anything, just this outward reaction to something really plays an impact.
Yeah. So they don't take that intrinsic quality very important as the outside qualities. So like, for example, win and lose situation. Always make them feel that it's just a game. Or if for example, they didn't try enough, maybe you can tell them, like, as far as the performance in school is concerned, you can talk to them what was the, you know, cause. And I'm sure the benefits would overweigh.
Definitely, inshallah.
Of talking to them, that is.
Definitely. Inshallah, unfortunately, that's all the time that we have. Dear audience, thank you for joining us on the program. If you have any questions, comments, or suggestions, please contact us at our email, englishradio@irib.ir, and visit us at our website, parstoday.com. Inshallah, till the next episode, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Islam solves all of its problems, Allah leaves no stone unturned. Perfect with no flaws at all are the laws of Allah. A way of life, a way of life, a way of life, a way of life. Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Food for thought.
Hello, dear friends, and let us reflect on what the Holy Prophet's divinely designated heir, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him, has said about prosperity in life and salvation in afterlife. Charity is an effective cure, and the actions of people in their present life will be before their eyes in the next life.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en. Before Mohammed bin Salman came to power as the Saudi crown prince and the de facto leader of the kingdom in 2017, he established a charity by the name of MISC, or Prince Mohammed bin Salman bin Abdulaziz Foundation, a non-profit foundation with the stated goal of cultivating and encouraging learning and leadership in youth for a better future in Saudi Arabia.
MISC was in fact central to the so-called MBS project, aimed at promoting Bin Salman as a compassionate leader who cares for the well-being of others. Much to the dismay of the young crown prince, MISC is now engulfed in a spate of scandals, including the Khashoggi hit. The foundation came under suspicion following a lawsuit filed in the U.S. last November, according to which MISC's former Secretary General, Badr al-Assakr, had interactions with two former Twitter employees, namely Ali al-Zabara and Ahmed Abu Amr, both accused of spying on private user data of some Saudi dissidents and passing it to Riyadh. The suit asserted that al-Assakr had provided gifts, cash payments, and promises of future employment in exchange for non-public information about Twitter users. The two employees, along with Ahmed al-Mutairi, who then worked for the Saudi royal family, tapped data from 6,000 Twitter accounts in the years 2014 and 2015. The aim was to identify, and needless to say, to punish some of the Saudi dissidents who would criticize the kingdom's ruling family on the social media platform. The three men all worked for al-Assakr, who was back then in charge of Bin Salman's charity foundations with a small fortune in his pocket. But that was not the first and last time al-Assakr, who still continues to have a senior role at MISC, hit the headlines for his non-philanthropic work. Just a few weeks after the killing of Jamal Khashoggi, the Turkish newspaper Yeni Safak ran the story that the Saudi intelligence officer at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul called al-Assakr four times the day Khashoggi was killed.
Mohammed bin Salman is not only the absolute ruler of Saudi Arabia, meaning that he controls everything from the functions of the state to murders that are carried out, assassinations that are carried out, to the charitable trust. And we shouldn't be surprised at all that he is still busy trying to brutally murder people. Mohammed bin Salman has not been held accountable in any way for the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and we're right now at the anniversary of that.
Critics say beneath the surface of MISC and gentle appearance of its former Secretary General, who happens to head bin Salman's private office, lie dark secrets that dovetail with the Saudi crown prince's real image, not the one burnished by his spin doctors. In the words of director of Freedom Forward, Sanjeev Berry, the crown prince and his henchmen keep trying to present themselves in a positive light. Yet behind the scenes, they spy on dissidents' Twitter accounts and are willing to take a bone saw to anyone who disagrees with them. Initially, a number of big names like the United Nations, the Gates Foundation, Bloomberg, Harvard University, and General Electric sealed partnerships with MISC. But in the wake of the Khashoggi killing, more of them, like the Gates Foundation and Harvard University, cut ties with it.
Mohammed bin Salman, since he came into power, has been trying to sell us an image of himself, like a Disney World version of a Saudi crown prince one who is a reformer, one who is bringing his country into the modern era. But in reality, he is a brutal dictator who has created the worst humanitarian crisis on the planet in Yemen, who chops up the bodies of journalists, who imprisons women for speaking out against him, or for speaking out calling for their rights. And so, you know, he's trying to present this Disneyland image, but especially after Khashoggi's murder and looking at heroes like Lujain al-Haqloul, who remains imprisoned in Saudi Arabia, we easily see through this image and see him for the brutal, bonesaw, misogynist dictator that he is.
The scandalous story of Misk reached its crescendo in August this year, when former Saudi intelligence officer Saad al-Jabri filed a lawsuit in the U.S., alleging that the Saudi crown prince plotted to assassinate him by sending a 50-person kill team, dubbed the Tiger Squad, a few weeks after the killing of Khashoggi. According to al-Jabri, Misk conspired with al-Sakr and bin Salman to covertly recruit individuals to serve as agents and who participated in the hunt for him on U.S. and Canadian soil. The hitmen were offered employment at Misk as a reward for aiding the Crown Prince and Mr. al-Sakr. Concerns about the so-called charitable foundation intensified in September 2017, when people from Misk repeatedly asked one of Jabri's sons for contact details of Jabri himself and his wife, as well as about their residency status in the United States.
So as Mohammed bin Salman is trying to paint himself as this modernizer, as this reformer, we are continuing to expose the Saudi regime for the brutal dictatorship that it is, for the war crimes that it commits. Saudi Arabia this year is hosting the G20 forum, but across the board, mayors of cities across America and across the world who have been invited are canceling. And they are canceling because of the imprisoned women, because of the brutal crackdowns on journalists, on dissidents, because of the brutal war in Yemen.
The Misk case begs this question. If Saudi officials can run spy rings, dismember a journalist, and dispatch a kill team all under the guise of a charity, what can they not do in an all-out military conflict like the Yemen war? Whether these are just the tip of the iceberg or not, Misk Foundation, first and foremost, embodies the Saudi duplicity entrenched in the kingdom's ruling family, where things are not really what they seem.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
Raditu billahi rabba wa bil islam dina.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim, in the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Dear listeners, dear brothers and sisters, Salamun Alaikum. So welcome to this program. Today's special. We're going to speak about the struggle against the self, or Jihadun Nafs. So I invite you to be with today's special.
Felt that God answered my call. There was that one place I always thought about, and I just wanted to be there with you. The place that no eye has ever seen, the place that no heart has ever perceived. I had a great feeling inside of me that one day I'd be there with you. And now that we're here,
today, Monday, is the 27th of Jamadil Awwal, 1442 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 22nd of day 1399 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 11th of January, 2021 of Christian Gregorian calendar. This is the ninth chapter Yusuf, verse 53.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم وما أبرئ نفسي إن النفس لأمارة بالسوء إلا ما رحم ربي إن ربي غفور رحيم.
And I do not acquit myself. Indeed, the soul is a persistent enjoiner of evil, except those upon which my Lord has mercy. Indeed, my Lord is forgiving and merciful.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Many Islamic narrations have pointed out the dangerous qualities present in the soul regarding giving excuses for its evil tendencies, self-satisfaction, and self-gratification as the results of corrupt reasoning, which are counted among the greatest of the traps laid by the Satan. One should never admire himself, immaculate and free of blame, excusing oneself of faults.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free. I wish that somehow you tell me out aloud that on that day I'll be okay. But we'll never know, 'cause that's not the way it was. Help me find my way.
What is the struggle against the self? Jihad on nafs is the struggle against evil ideas, desires, and powers of lust, anger, and insatiable imagination, placing all of them under the dictates of reason and faith in obedience to Allah's commands. And finally, purging all satanic ideas and influences from one's soul. This struggle is considered as the major struggle, or Jihadul Akbar, for in the struggle against the self, one has to constantly battle enemies that are hosted inside his own existence. Islamic ethical teachings indicate that the one who succeeds in this struggle can rise above and beyond the level of angels, and one who fails in this struggle will descend to a level lower than the level of animals, and may even be grounded among the legions of the devil.
Dr. Fakhr Rohani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa bi nasta'in. In this episode, we are going to talk about jihad against our carnal desires. We find that the tyrants throughout history, the tyrants have been those people who have listened only to the carnal desires. I mean, in the form of torturing people, in the form of punishing innocent people, or for example acquiring or accumulating everything for their own uses and pleasure, and so on. In Islamic instructions, we find that there are some stages or some phases of reaching the stage or the status of being able to confront our carnal desires. So one of them is yaghba. Yaghba means being awake, I mean being awareness. First of all, everybody should be aware of one's own soul and the and what has been put in us inherent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, that we are expected to reach the goals indicated and determined by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for each and every of us. Certainly in the case of a great majority of people, I mean, people prefer this world because this world is quite tangible, okay, because of its tangibility, because of its accessibility. People have more inclination to reaching everything in this world, okay, rather than receiving the rewards in the world hereafter. The Holy Quran refers to this in this way: إن هؤلاء يحبون العاجلة ويذرون وراءهم يوما ثقيلا. Those people prefer to receive everything available in this world, ويذرون وراءهم, while they are unaware of what will be provided for them in the world hereafter.
My life is not the same when I'm too concerned by what they say. Why should I when I have you? To doubt you would be the worst mistake. Deep inside I know that amidst all the darkness and everything which makes no sense, I know that you exist. You are the light. Guides me through my darkest nights. Shows me right from wrong. That often lies, 'cause I don't need anyone, anything in life but you. No, I don't need anyone to show me my way. No, I don't need anyone but you.
Piety and the Self. It's the title of this part. Piety frees a person from the imprisonment of whims and passionate and cuts off the chains of greed, prejudice, lust, and wrath wrapped around his neck. Piety is not a limitation, but on the contrary, it bestows the mastership and being in control of one's own self. It bestows upon a human being prestige, honor, nobility, power, dignity, and steadfastness. It protects the heart from satanic assaults, thus making it ready for the descent of Allah's angels, illuminating him with divine light and bestowing upon him peace and tranquility. Piety for human being is like his home and clothing, which protects him from national calamities, cold and hot temperatures. Allah the Almighty in the Holy Quran, chapter 7, verse 26 said, but the best raiment is the raiment of righteousness.
Every time I close my eyes, I see in front of me. I still can hear your voice calling out my name. And I remember all the stories you told me. I miss the time you were around. I miss the time you were around. But I'm so grateful for every moment I spent with you. 'Cause I know life won't last forever.
The steps of a struggle against the self: self-examination, evaluation, and criticism. After making a vow to be a person of a struggle, willpower, and resolution, he must understand that the hereafter is the place where his secret will be exposed. Thus, he should evaluate himself on a daily basis to get rid of evil habits and desires, to acquire more noble human character, and to perform better actions than before. He must realize that committing sin takes away from him noble essence of humanity, and he must pray to Allah for his assistance and for the intercession of the Prophet and the members of his household. Peace be upon them all.
Who makes the decisions? The body is the vehicle. Who runs the body? Is it the mind or the soul? We believe that it's the soul that wins the body. The mind tells the soul what to do. It offers advice. It gives it counsel. It tells it, well, you should take this road. If you would like to go to heaven, seek this road. Seek this path. But at the end of the day, it's up to the nafs to decide whether it likes to listen to the mind or not. Sometimes there's an eternal struggle between the mind and the nafs. The mind tells the body to fast during Ramadan. The nafs says no. It's too long. The day is too long. It's 17 hours or 16 hours. The body cannot withstand such fasting. The mind keeps on insisting, but the nafs says no. The nafs, the mind says abstain from haram food. The nafs says eat away. Don't listen. There's an eternal struggle. Sometimes the mind wins, sometimes the nafs wins. It depends on that human being. If you've developed a stronger mind that allows you to defeat the mind will always be the victor, and the nafs will be defeated. But sometimes it's the other way around. The nafs comes out victorious.
I think this topic we talked about is so interesting. There was the struggle against the self, or jihad on nafs. So we continue, inshallah, on the next episode of today's special. Till then, tomorrow, have a nice time. Fi amanillah.
Yourself. Can't you see this wonder spread in front of you? The clouds floating by, the sky so clear and blue, planets in their orbits, the moon and the sun, such perfect harmony. Let's start questioning ourselves. Isn't this proof enough for us? Thank you.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.